Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored to share the microphone with really interesting business leaders. Now, these are people who have wonderful stories to share, and they are excited to freely share their journeys, their great stories, their business wisdom, tips, and actionable advice. In short, they're willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. In fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now. And our topic today is one that is very near and dear to my heart, how to double your sales using Ninja SEO with Tim Cameron Kitchen. Now, Tim is a former professional drummer. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice here. And he is now the UK's best-selling digital marketing author, and he runs a 60-person digital marketing agency called Exposure Ninja. And I'm going to get him to tell the story of how he went to from one employee, and I'm guessing that was him, to about 70 in a very short time. Now, having worked in online marketing for 9 years, and manage the building and promotion of more than 300 websites, Tim oversees all Ninja activity and is involved, deeply involved in designing the strategy for all sites and promotion. He's also a bestseller in his 4 best-selling books about online marketing have educated more UK businesses about SEO than anyone else. So in this episode, he's going to share some vital SEO tips and advice, such as how to use your blog to actually attract visitors, the most common mistakes people make on their websites which prevent them from ranking, I'm guessing on Google, how to identify which keywords you should be targeting, and how to compete and win against huge competitors, even if you don't have a big marketing budget. Tim, good morning. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. And as I mentioned earlier in the green room, you are my first international guest.
Thank you, Denise. I'm honored to be talking to you all the way from actually quite sunny UK today.
I know. And here it's dark and dreary, so go figure. So, listen, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know your assistant reached out and asked for you to come on, and I was delighted to welcome you. I'm kind of in the same industry, not at the level you are, but I'm a web developer, a virtual assistant, and SEO is rather limited, and that's why I'm so glad you're here. I mean, I know enough to get by, but I'm no expert. And I know that we have a lot of questions about, you know, how people can kind of improve what they're doing before they make that big leap into, do I hire somebody? And eventually I think you do want to hire somebody, but in the meantime, I think you're here to kind of share what we can do to get to that point.
Yeah, totally. And I think even if people are looking to hire someone to help with their SEO, it's really, really important that they understand the basics first. This is something where, you know, I'll be the first to say the SEO world is full of, well, I call it a bit of a swamp, really. There's a lot of misinformation. That's the entire reason I even wrote the first book, was just because of the sheer amount of misinformation out there. And there's a lot of people that are willing to sell some very compelling sounding things to people who are willing to put their trust in them. So we always say it's really important that you understand exactly what it is that you're buying anytime you're buying SEO, and for the success of the business, you know, SEO is really important. Ranking well on Google can really facilitate huge growth in a business, as I'm sure we'll talk about today. So this isn't something where you should just think, oh, I'm going to hire someone to do it and I'm just going to leave them to get on with it. You should really know at least the basics.
Oh, listen, you're preaching to the choir. I have exactly the same attitude about the virtual assistants industry. Like, you know, anybody can write fairly compelling copy, but can they produce? And, you know, that's a big problem. Unless, and I tell this to people all the time, unless or until you find out how to actually work with your virtual assistant or your SEO guy or your Infusionsoft person, unless you know what it is that you're asking of them and what they can deliver, you're just wandering around in a mud pile. I mean, you're just stuck.
Exactly. If you don't have a goal going in, then you're going to be working to their goal, and their goal might not be the same as your goal. In fact, it probably isn't. So very important to know what you want up front and have an idea about how you're going to get it.
That, and I really want to talk about that too. So before I go any further, tell people a little bit more about you that I might have missed. How did you go from being a drummer to where you are now? That's got to be a fascinating story.
Yeah, so I came out of university and I'd played drums my whole life. I wanted to be a rock star. That was like everything to me. Drums were the center of my world. And I came out of uni, realized I really didn't want to get a proper job. You know, I wanted to play drums, and in particular, I wanted to record. So I set up a recording studio in my house and recorded for people over the internet. I was one of the first people to do that. And my everyday life was really digital marketing. I was building a website for myself. I was promoting my services to people all around the world. So I was completely doing digital marketing before I realized that was even a thing. Before, you know, I built my first website in Photoshop. I don't know how. I didn't even know you could
build websites
in Photoshop.
I did that once, and it was the most difficult thing I think I've ever done.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's just one of those things
where
when you don't know any better, you just pick something and then you just keep on going until it's done. So I did some digital marketing and managed to make myself pretty busy as a drummer. And then a couple of years later, I started getting a bit bored of it. The music I was playing on wasn't great. And I just thought it's time for a bit of a change. So I wrote a book about how to do this drumming thing. And I started selling that to drummers, and that went well. So I ended up filming some DVDs showing them how to set up in this business. And a lot of what I ended up teaching these drummers over the course of about a year and a half or 2 years was actually digital marketing. That's the thing that they needed to know, was how to build and promote their website. So I ended up finding myself as a digital marketer and teaching other musicians how to market themselves. And then one day I got talking to my next door neighbor, who was a plasterer, and he was always around the house. He never had any work. So I asked him if his website was getting him any business. And he said he didn't even have a website. This was just completely alien to me, right? Because my whole life was on the internet. So I just built him a quick website and used what I knew about SEO that I'd taught myself and got it to the top of Google. And that website completely changed his life. And from there, I just transitioned into doing SEO and digital marketing. And that was about 6 years ago now. And it's been a pretty crazy ride since.
You know, a lot of people say, well, I want a website, but I don't want to do, you know, social media marketing. I can't wait to see what you've got to say about that. I know what I think, but I'm dying to hear what you've got to say.
A lot of people, I need a website. I'm just going to send it to my existing customers. I don't really need to promote it or anything. In a way, I kind of get that. But then I also think that's like buying a car and saying, I'm only ever going to drive to the shop down the road. When it comes to social media or SEO or paid traffic, I don't think people should ever count out any particular traffic source, because there is so much opportunity. Getting a website ranked on Google can just completely transform a business. To say that, you know, you don't have any intention of promoting it or you don't want to run social media or anything is crazy, and it's heartbreaking to me. I get it, but, you know, I think it's all about growth, and you've got to be open to promoting it.
It really does. And I tell people, listen, there are millions and millions of websites on the internet. I mean, unless you're driving traffic to it in multiple ways, what you've built is just a really pretty boat anchor. That's it. That's all you've got. It's just going to sit there, and it's not going to perform. And you may have paid a good bit of money for it. You may have done it yourself. Anything in between. But you've got to actively drive traffic to it. And of course, you know, Google is one way. social media, creating products, and, you know, getting your mail list. So I'd love to talk about all that, but I know we're talking today about, you know, primarily SEO. So how in the world did you teach yourself about SEO? Because that's not a topic a lot of people think, oh, that's fascinating. I'm going to go do that.
Yeah, I guess it just came from I knew that I wanted to be ranked. When I was a drummer, I knew that I needed to be ranked on Google. It was where my customers were. I knew I needed to do it. So without any budget or even any knowledge of, you know, when I started in that, I didn't even know what SEO was. I probably did SEO for a year without even knowing that the phrase SEO existed. So it was just kind of, what do I need to do to grow my business? And this thing seems to be a really good way of doing it. So I started doing it and got more and more in depth just from learning and experimenting. I did a lot of experimenting. And after I did that first plasterers website, I ended up building about 100 tradesman websites for plumbers and heating engineers around the UK. And just going through that process of doing it just teaches you so much. You start to figure out what's true and what's just complete make-believe. What are the, you know, the SEO rumors and stuff like that, and what stuff actually works. Obviously what worked then, some of it no longer works today, but, you know, there's plenty of stuff which carries over. So I guess just trial an error and just doing a hell of a lot of learning on YouTube, really.
Well, and I'm listening to you and I'm realizing that you didn't just teach yourself one discipline, you actually taught yourself two. Website development is a discipline all by itself. And then you have to bring in, kind of like you're talking about the trades, you know, when you build a house, you have to bring in the people who are going to float the walls, you have to bring in the plumbers, you have to bring in the electricians, you have to bring in, you know, all these different trades. And when you build a website, you have to essentially bring in something very similar. You have to bring in your SEO. You have to bring in your social media. You know, there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes in web development. So you are actually working in two very distinct areas that you've now kind of melded together, which I think is brilliant.
Well, yeah, and I have to say, you know, at the start, these tradesman websites were super basic. Like, there were nothing fantastic at all. So now when Exposure Ninja builds a website, we have a design, at least one person on design. We have at least one person on development. We have copy. We have marketing. We have SEO. So we might have six different people building a website. And I'm not specialist, you know. I could half-ass some of those jobs, but really, you know, what that's a completely different level. The sites I was building were so basic. But do you know what? For these tradesmen, they were absolutely fine, because when you go on a plumber's website, you just want a picture of the guy, you want to know which services he offers, and you want to know how to contact him, right? It doesn't need to be some kind of amazing fancy thing, which is lucky, because I couldn't have done that even if I wanted to.
Now, I remember my first website. You know, I was the only graduating female in my computer science. I have a computer science degree.
Wow.
I was the only girl. And I knew that I was never going to work for somebody's company. That was never an option for me. I needed to do it on my own. And I still cringe when I think of that first website I built, because this is back in 2000, 2001. And we didn't have what we have now, graphical user interface and all the nifty things that we can do now. And it was strictly HTML, and it had a blue background and white text, and that was it. That's all you could do.
Wow.
And I was so proud of it. You talk about basic. I mean, I look at it now in my mind and just go, oh, that was. But
yeah.
It worked. I mean, it was what we had available at the time.
Yeah, and I tell you, you know, without WordPress, I'd have never been able to get started. So I'm very envious of your ability to actually code stuff. My coding is well, I wouldn't even call it coding; it's hacking, basically. But yeah, I think it's incredible how, just even since I was building those first websites in 2011 maybe, and obviously since you're building a site in 2001, just how quickly web development and digital marketing has evolved and how much people are able to do themselves. I think that's really encouraging. I think it can also be a little bit misleading in some areas. And we work with a lot of people who build Shopify sites. And I think the challenge with a platform like Shopify is that it can feel very easy to get started, and you finish your site and you realize that actually, as you said earlier, there's no traffic coming to it. And then you get a professional opinion on it, and actually the site needs a huge amount of work in order to be functional from a conversion point of view as well, which is something that is absolutely key. And I think the appearance of how far you can go yourself is completely changed. So it's still, you know, you still need a good healthy dose of learning and a passion for what makes people buy online and how to get that visibility. But certainly the tools today are just completely another level from what I had access to and what you had access to as well in the early days, I guess.
Oh, listen, once WordPress came along, I just knew there was a God. I was like, oh, there it is. It's magic. I love WordPress.
That was the moment you were converted.
I was converted. I mean, I always kind of had a sense that maybe kind of sort of, but it's like, oh, now there was proof. But anyway, I wanted to talk with you about, I wanted to talk with you about WordPress SEO too, because, you know, we all know about those of us who work in WordPress and, you know, kind of follow along. We all know of Yoast SEO, which I think now is a paid premium. But there's some interesting kind of changes in WordPress. You know, you'll go to put in your meta words and a little box will pop up and say, you know, Google really doesn't look at these meta tags anymore. So what's going on with that?
So meta keywords is actually something that Google hasn't looked at since the early 2000s. It was,
really?
It used to, in the very early days, people used to put in meta keywords and, you know, that would be a ranking indicator. And there was some rumor that Bing was still using that until relatively recently. But actually, I saw a piece in the last couple of weeks that actually said that Bing might be using meta keywords as a negative ranking factor. So really, really not useful at all. The only people in SEO who use meta keywords are competitors who are looking to see which keywords you think are most relevant. So meta keywords is not something worth too much attention. Meta titles and page titles, on the other hand, are very important. So that's one of the things that you'd edit in Yoast. And that's typically some of the lowest hanging fruit is in the title on every page. So this is the you control it in your back end. It's the little bit that shows up in the browser window at the top of the screen. And that's really important. So if you use your primary target keywords at the start of your page title, then just doing that can get you some ranking movement. It's really significant. So that's one of the first areas that we look at when we're working on a client campaign. And it's one of the first areas that we suggest people look at if they're doing this stuff themselves.
Now, when you say titles, to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, to me, the title needs to make sense. It needs to be readable by a human eye as well. And I see a lot of people trying to trick the search engines, and they'll come up with these oddball titles, and you look at it, you know, you'll stumble across it on Google or Bing or wherever. And my eyebrows raise, like, what are they saying? What is this all about? I'm almost never curious enough to click on it because I know I'm going to be irritated if I do. But
yeah.
I have to wonder what they're thinking. So what are your thoughts?
Well,
first of all, how do you find a decent title? And then what should it actually look like?
So the title, I'd always start with your target keyword. And then at the end of your page title, you usually have your brand name. So once you've got those two things, you only really have 60 characters for the whole page title. So once you've got those things in place, you might have a few words left. Normally, you'd have a variation of your primary keyword target in there as well. So, for example, I was analyzing a well-optimized site today that was selling protein powder. So their page title was whey protein supplements, and then the brand name. Well, that's completely fine, right? It makes sense. It's just three words. It basically says what's on the tin. But you make a really good point about the fact that your page titles have to be readable. And actually, this is related to a key thing with SEO and the misconceptions around SEO is keyword stuffing. And I need to make sure that I stuff my text content full of keywords. Really, really no, it's such a bad idea. Google uses readability as a ranking indicator. So if your text doesn't make sense, whether it's in your page title, or whether it's in your body copy or your blog post, if your text doesn't make sense or is difficult to read, that's going to hold you back. So people always need to design their sites primarily for a human visitor, because if humans have a good time on your site, then Google will rank you well. It really comes back to that. Google is just trying to mimic human behavior. So Google's trying to mimic what a human likes. If you build stuff for humans, you use the sort of language that your human visitors are using. So you use the same keywords because that's the phrases that they're looking for. That's what they understand. Then your site will rank better.
And see, I didn't know that, but I must have instinctively figured that out because that makes perfect sense to me. You probably, this was probably before you started working on any of this, but it used to be that people would, I think they were called black hat tactics, but they would take in an almost invisible writing at the very bottom of their website. If they had a white footer, they would put a bunch of white text in there that the human eye couldn't read. And if you kind of, you know, I always found I can read source code, so I could always find them. For a time there, the biggest keyword that was used on any kind of website, it didn't matter if it was a plumber or, you know, if it was a clothing shop, was Pamela Anderson Lee or Pamela Anderson or Baywatch, because she had this massive draw. You know, in, I have to wonder if some of that didn't lead to Google going, no, no, you're not going to do this anymore. I mean, this poor woman, she was just on every website that was built. Like, and it was just, it was crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, luckily that stuff, Google kind of stamped out on all of that, but we still see it. You know, I still have conversations with clients and sometimes they'll come up, I tell them that you need to have some good quality text on your website. And they say, but my website's black. Could I just put the text in black so that people don't have to see it? And you're like, no, none of that.
I wanted to ask you about that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go on. No, go on.
No, I was going to ask you about black websites. I frankly hate them. I think they're hard to read. Yeah, I don't like them. Now, I've seen some that had, you know, maybe like a dark website with a gradient, but my objection to those is, number one, they're hard on the eyes. Number two, they're almost impossible to read on handheld devices, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, completely. Impossible to read on handheld devices. They work really badly with glare, which you get a lot of glare on things like iPhone. So, completely avoid black text, white background all the way. You want absolutely maximum contrast. Yes, if people have different display settings, if they need to see, you know, they need a dark screen, they need an inverted screen, then they'll have that setting on their computer or their phone already. So, yeah, black text, white background, 100% of the time.
I agree. And you know what I'm noticing with a lot of templates that are coming out? They're not, the black font is not the choice. It's just dark gray. And I insist, you know, you can't read them. And I will always change it to black, period. It's not, it's maybe decorative. I don't care. You can't read it. So if you can't read it, you're not serving your client, right?
Do you know what, this comes, you make a really good point, and there's, I've been thinking a lot about conversion optimization recently, because we work with a huge number of businesses and increase their traffic, and if they've built their own website, we inevitably get a phone call or an email a few months down the line saying, hey, our traffic seems to have gone up, but actually we're still not getting any customers. So we end up having a conversation about conversion optimization, and a huge part of the problem with a lot of websites is that they've been designed by someone who is really creative, is amazing at design, but they don't have a marketing bone in their body. And I think part of the educational
evolution of web design.
You are
speaking my language now.
I think web design will evolve so that the marketing elements of a site and the SEO elements of a site become more commonplace. But it's unbelievable. I was looking at a beautiful site that was sent over to us today. It must have cost a huge amount of money. And you couldn't tell what the business did above the fold on the homepage, right? They'd gone for this really creative, funny, witty headline, which just made absolutely no sense, didn't set the tone. If you come onto the site, we like to imagine that Homer Simpson is the typical website visitor. So let's build with Homer Simpson in mind. Let's make sure that we could explain to Homer what the business does.
Perfect.
He would land on this page and have no idea whatsoever. So there's a real issue here with beautiful looking sites, and a lot of it is client driven because they want a site that has all these fancy effects, and or they don't want too much text, they want to let the pictures do the talking. That's another classic one, and it leads to websites which actually don't do the main thing which they're designed to do, which is not look pretty, right? This is not Tinder, this is business. The website is here to sell, so we need to tell people what the site is about. We need to have good quality text. We need to make it readable. We need to make it user-friendly. And importantly, we need to ask for the sale. So none of that stuff really comes up during the conversation a lot of the time, unfortunately.
And I've seen the same thing. I mean, I do a lot of rebuilds for people who, unfortunately, paid a lot of money to somebody who was a pretty decent designer, or in some cases an excellent designer, if you're an art gallery. But they didn't know squat about marketing. And you look at it, and, you know, I'll be on the phone with a client and say, what are you trying to tell me? What is this? I don't understand. And they get a little bit offended sometimes, or they're, you know, they get a little hurt. But then eventually I'll just say, look, I want you to put your ego aside, sit down, take a deep breath tomorrow, not today, because you're still, you know, in reactionary mode. Walk through your website like a visitor and tell me what you see. And we'll talk again on Wednesday. Mm. And it's a completely different conversation next time, because they've had the time to walk through it and go, oh, yeah, okay. So, you know, you
like
have to
run
have
stuff.
Somebody that knows marketing to build your website. I think that's a given.
Exactly. You want someone who knows marketing to build your website, and you want someone who doesn't know marketing to give you honest feedback. Because I think the other thing is, a lot of us are so involved with our business. When we see our website, I know what my business is. You know what your business is. The plumber knows what his business is. So he looks at his website and he's looking for, he knows what he's looking at. So I always like to run stuff past my wife. Say, hey, babes, come and check out this website. What do you think it is? And even if I think it's obvious, she'll look at it and go, I've got no idea. Or what would you click on this page? And she's like, I don't know. There's no menu. And I'm like, yep, there it is. And she's like, no, that looks like an address because it's ordered vertically. It's like, okay, cool. That's really good feedback. And if you run user tests, we like to use usertesting.com. If you run user tests, it's amazing the feedback that you get from people. Like, some people are so far behind, and it's not their fault, it's because they're not professional marketers, right? So they're so far behind, they're not even thinking on terms of, you know, they look at the mobile hamburger icon, for example, that people use as a menu on mobile devices, and they don't, you know, they don't know what it is, so they don't see a menu on that page. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that totally makes sense. But until you start thinking in that frame of mind, until you picture Homer struggling with this website, you might not think that that's not obvious. So, yeah, it's have someone who knows what they're doing with marketing to build the site, and have someone who doesn't know what they're doing with marketing to review it.
I love the Homer analogy. That is going to be stuck in my head all weekend. I mean, that is just brilliant. Okay, so let's go back to SEO, because it really is a very important part of building a website. So I think what we're telling our audience here is, you know, when you go to find a web developer, there are a lot of questions that you need to be asking. Number one, are you just going to build me a really pretty boat anchor? Or are you going to help me consult with me about marketing, SEO, social media? You know, you sound like, your company sounds very like much like mine, which is a one-stop shop. We deliver a turnkey solution. We don't just build a website. And unfortunately, there are a lot of companies out there that just, they don't operate that way. So I would love for you to give, you know, our audience just some things that they need to be looking for when they're looking for a web developer.
Yeah, sure. And the other thing I should say is that I love local business. I love, you know, people, freelancers and all of that. It's very difficult to find someone who has the perfect combination of creativity to design a site, development expertise, so the technical ability to build it, and then also the kind of marketing and technical ability to SEO it. So you'll often go to a one-stop, not like a one-stop shop like you or I, but a one-person operation. They'll say, yeah, cool, I'll design it, I'll build it, I'll do the SEO. It's very rare that they're good at all of those three things. They're going to be specialists in one area, right? They're either going to be analytical or they're going to be creative. And whichever one they're not, they're going to be trying to compensate for as much as they can. So I'd always say it's perfectly okay if the person who builds your website and the person who does the SEO is different. If you're going for like one guy, if you're going for a freelancer, that's perfectly okay. And then what should they ask? Well, I think anytime you ask a web developer, is my website going to include SEO? Is my website going to rank? They're going to say yes. Because either they're lying or they don't know. Right? They don't know what they don't know.
Right.
So they think that
and hope is not a strategy.
Because, exactly. They think that they put the meta keywords in the back end in Yoast, and then therefore the website is SEO'd. So I would go to your web developer's website, right-click on their homepage, click on View Source, and find the thing that starts title. Find that page title. If their page title is well optimized, then so if it has, you know, web development or web developer or digital marketing phrase at the start of their own homepage title, then you know that they know at least the basics. And that's
right. And your homepage
really
title should not be home. And I see that all the time.
Exactly.
You know, you'll go to post something on Facebook or LinkedIn,
home,
and it just says
mile.
Home. That's it. Right.
Yeah. If it says home, you turn around, you run, and you don't stop running, because that indicates that they don't even know the basics. And then you're looking for other things such as, is the headline on that page, is it welcome? Or is it something which actually tells people, you know, about the business? So don't just judge people by the beauty of their websites. Of course, the site has to look good. We always say you should aim to have the best looking site in your market, because first impressions really count. But we're also looking for, is the messaging really concise? If you land on any page of their website, can you tell what the business does? Can you tell who the target audience is? Because remember, people can come into your site from any page. So you need to look at your web developer's website with the same analytical eye that your audience is going to be looking at your website. If they're doing what they should be doing and you see on their website, then that's a really good start. But it's so sad. So many web development companies or digital marketers, they don't even have the basics in place. So just checking your page titles, really good way to start. And at least it means that you can disqualify anyone who doesn't have a clue.
That's excellent. So when you get on the phone with these people, are there certain questions that you should be asking if you've already done your homework and you're confident that you want to go ahead and have this discussion?
Yes. So I'd ask them how many, you know, what their plan is. You should just ask them what their plan is for the SEO, really. There are other things that you want to look out for. For example, making sure that if you're a service business, do you have separate pages set up for each of your different services? That's really important, because let's say that you're an accountant and you offer tax returns and you offer payroll services. Well, those are completely different. So it doesn't really make sense to just have one page which lists all of your different services. You should have a separate page for tax returns and a separate page for payroll. And the benefit of that is you can make that content completely tailored to the person who's going to come onto your site and look for payroll or look for tax returns. And it means you can optimize those pages so that both of them can rank for the individual phrases. So just ask your web developer, what would you suggest for the structure of my website? How could you make sure that each of my pages rank on Google? And then ask them for their credentials, ask them for how many sites they've optimized. Just get them to talk about SEO for a while. And if it starts to smell a little bit strange, if they start saying some odd stuff, then just walk away. And you can always ask them to show you examples of sites that they've ranked as well, or ask you to show them examples of websites they've built which have gone on to become successful for their owners. That's another good indicator that someone knows what they're doing.
And these are questions you should be asking. This is your business you're placing in somebody's hands. You need to be asking some pretty hard questions and getting some solid answers.
If this isn't as important as hiring an employee, then I don't think it's being given the right importance. Like, your website, you might redesign every 3 years, and the visibility of your site could well define your success during the next 3 years, particularly if you're a growing company. The worst thing you could do is make a bad decision here. So take time, talk to different people. Make sure that you really believe and that you buy into the company. I think that's really important. You know, you have a podcast, we have a podcast, we have books, and you know, it just means that people can get familiar with your business rather than just go onto Google or whatever, see who's advertising, and just, you know, call up the first one and see what they say. You've really got to you've really got to make yourself familiar with the company, I think, to make sure that this is a partnership, because that's what it is. You know, this person is basically acting as your marketing department, and that's an important role to fill.
I love that you said partnership, because that is what it is. You know, we're not just sitting here at the end of our keyboards and saying, okay, tell me what you want. Now you go away, we'll fix it, and we'll send you a bill. It very much is a partnership.
Yeah.
I mean, we, like, that's why I call, you know, myself, I've trademarked your partner in success. I can't do it on my own. You have to be a part of it. So, yeah, I think that's a big, big thing. I wanted to ask you, too, you know, there's these days, when I first started, these didn't exist, landing pages. And you kind of referenced it earlier about, you know, having really good copy and, you know, having text on your page. So explain to our audience, if you will, what the difference is between your homepage, your index page, and a good landing page. Because I think there's a lot of confusion about just what the two functions of, you know, the functions of these two different pages are.
Yeah, so the homepage, people should know what the homepage is. That is like the first page on your website. So that is your website.com. That is a homepage. So your homepage wants to set the scene for your business, and the other goal of your homepage is to direct people to the information that's most relevant for them. A landing page is a page that you intend to send cold traffic to. So typically, if you're advertising, let's say that you're advertising because you're an accountant and you want to sell tax returns, so you might be trying to get ranked for Tax Return New York or something like that, you would not send people to your homepage. You would send people through to a page which is optimized for tax returns. So it talks about tax returns. It says, if you want a free consultation to discuss your tax return, fill in your contact details here. So a landing page is a very specific page with a very specific goal, and that is to convert a particular type of a visitor. And traditionally, a landing page stood alone from the rest of your website, right? So it might not even be on your menu. It might be just something that exists parallel to your website, but you wouldn't find it if you were on the main body of the website. But most of the time now, what we're doing is we're actually making the individual pages on the website act as landing pages. So, for example, if you're an accountant, you would have a services drop down on your menu, and each of the individual service pages would be laid out like a landing page. So they assume no prior knowledge. They introduce the business. They set the scene. They answer all the questions that you would expect your homepage to answer. So is this business right for me? What makes them different? Where are they based? What do I need to do now? So you'd actually optimize and lay out your sub pages as if they were landing pages. I hope that makes sense.
I actually never thought of that. So the light bulb just went off over my head. You just taught me something. So I love that idea. And I'm actually rebuilding my website again. You know, we have to keep our stuff kind of fresh and relevant. And I keep looking at my business website going, I know that other people like it, but it's got to go. I've got to clean this thing up.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take your advice on that. But are you building these like on the page itself, or are you using something like lead pages? Because I know a lot of our audience is familiar with lead pages.
Yeah, I mean, we use a combination, really. So we use lead pages on our own site, and sometimes we'll make one of our sub pages a lead page, just because it's quick and easy to knock something up.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what I'm talking about is actually just in the layout of the website. So when you're designing the website, make it so that your sub pages all look like they could be the entry point to your website. I was recently looking through our analytics stats and found that actually only 24% of our visitors come in through the homepage. So 76% of our website's visitors come through other pages.
I'm so glad you said that, because a lot of people say, the index page, the homepage is the most important. And I will tell them no, because not everybody is going to be directed to that page. They're coming through Google, Bing, whatever search engine they're using. And they're finding you based on what they're typing into the search engine. So what your page returns in terms of meta, information or, tags, that's the page they're going to be directed to. That homepage, honestly, is not the biggest part of your, in my opinion, is not the biggest part of your website. And I'm so glad you're saying that.
Yeah, and with that frame, it's easy to see that these subpages, they are important. Most people don't really give them too much thought, do they? But it's the same with blog posts. We see with a lot of our clients now, if you write a really well written blog post, really well optimized long form blog post, that blog post will bring in a lot of traffic because that blog post will rank really well, unless that page is designed to turn a blog reader into a lead and funnel them back through your website. That blog traffic is going to come in and it's going to look around for a while and then it's going to leave, and it provides you absolutely no value at all. So it's really important that people look at every single page of their website. Could this page stand alone? If someone entered this page and this page only, would they know what your business did? Would that give them enough information for them to move to the next stage with you? If it doesn't, then you need to do some tweaking, because this is important stuff.
That is brilliant. I mean, I thought I knew everything, and apparently I do not. So I am so glad that you're here with me today. I mean, seriously, it never occurred to me that treating each individual interior, I call them interior pages, as a landing page. I mean, that's brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant.
I wish I could take credit. It's our development team.
Yeah, but there you go. You've just shared some great, I mean, that is, I'm going to be doing this. Okay, so I wanted to talk with you about conversion, because I know, you know, maybe people who are kind of new to what we're talking about, or even people, you know, have been doing this for a while but are getting, like me, some great ideas from you. Conversion. If you would tell our audience in the Homer Simpson way what conversion is and what are conversion blockers.
Okay, so conversion is when you turn a visitor into a lead or a buyer, right?
Right.
So most people, when if they were to have 1,000 people come to their website, normally maybe 5 or 10 of those people would turn into a customer. We've built websites. We've got one at the moment. Our highest performing website actually turns, on average, every 1,000 people, turns 364 of them into a lead. So the difference between converting 5 people and converting 364 people for the same amount of traffic shows you how important conversion rate optimization is, because this is about, you don't have to spend any money on advertising, you don't have to get any more traffic, you're just getting more leads out of your existing visitors. And most sites have so much low-hanging fruit when it comes to conversion rate, it's ridiculous. So a conversion blocker would be something on your website which stops people from taking action. This could be something that's unclear. It could be the speed of your website. So particularly on mobile, speed is ridiculously important. If your site's taking longer than a second to load, then you're in trouble on mobile. Unfortunately, lots of sites do take quite a long time to load on mobile. So, you know, those are the sorts of things which can be conversion blockers. And then, of course, you've got another whole category of stuff, which is like conversion facilitators. I always have trouble with that word. So things that make people convert more, such as visible signs of life. So good in social engagement. If you've got a little widget that says you've got this number of fans on Facebook, that facilitates conversion. If you've got social proof with testimonials and case studies, that encourages people, that increases your conversion rate. So there's conversion blockers and there's conversion facilitators.
So when you say conversion, what are you, for our audience, what are you trying to convert them to? Do you want them, I guess it's a number of things. Do you want them to go to an email list, to a webinar? What are we talking about here?
It really depends on the business. For most service businesses, you really want to generate a lead. So let's use our accountant example. Our accountant might have a call to action. Their main goal for the website would be to have people get in contact to request a free consultation. So they might have a box on every page of the website which says, book a free consultation and we'll help you identify the hidden profit areas in your business, or something like that. And once they fill in their details in that box might ask for their name, email address, optional phone number, and a short message to tell them, you know, to tell us what you're looking for. And then the business would then follow up with that person, and they'd also add them to the email list. You might also have other things like ebook downloads or webinars. Those wouldn't normally be the primary calls to action on a service business website. There'd normally be some kind of, you know, get in contact or get a free consultation. You normally want to start a conversation with people, really. It's really one of the key mistakes that people make is they think that their websites are here to sell their services. They're really not at all. Like we sell websites, but we'd never try and sell a website from our site, right? Our site is purely designed to have people get in contact to request a free marketing review, right? Everything about our site is request a free marketing review. Oh, you're interested in SEO? Cool, we'll take a look at your SEO when we do your free marketing review. You're looking for pay-per-click help? Great, get a free marketing review and we'll take a look at that. So the purpose of the site is actually just to start a conversation. What can you give people in order to have them put in their details so you can start a conversation so that you can prove some value early on? So that would typically be the conversion goal of a website.
And see, I'm so glad you're saying this because, and I've watched this for years, where web developers, virtual assistants, people in the service industry, online service industry, would hide behind a form. You would literally have to fill out this entire form, and I still see it. It's still, I can't get out of there quick enough. I'm like, nope, I'm gone. If you don't want to have a conversation with me where I can tell you this is what I, you know, my vision is, where you can consult a bit with me, I'm out of there. I'm not going to fill out a form and tell you what colors I want and some sites that I like the looks of. It's ridiculous. To me, I mean, that is the biggest block to having people get in touch with you is make them jump through those hoops. I think it's a huge mistake.
Yeah, it is for sure. Every additional field that you ask for on a form is going to reduce your conversion rate. So some people, if they're getting too many leads, they don't have a sales team or whatever, then they might want to include like disqualifying criteria, like what's your budget or something like that, so they can filter out the people that aren't quite right for them. But typically, if you just want to maximize the number of leads you get, which most people do, then you just want to ask for name, email address. Those are the only required fields. Then phone number, optional. Some people want to give their phone number. Some people might be working nights. They might not be wanting to talk on the phone. That doesn't mean they're a bad lead. It just means they don't want to talk on the phone. And then if they want to write a short message, then cool, they can do that. But yeah, just make it as low risk and make it as low pain as possible. So minimize those form fields. And the other side of that is to build the perceived value of what you're offering. So if you just say, if you're interested, contact me. Well, that's okay, but even more powerful than that is what can they actually get from it? So can they get a free consultation? Or do they get a free profit analysis? Do they get a free marketing analysis? Do they, you know, what's the actual benefit? How can you take people closer to their goals free of charge? And that's going to maximize the number of leads you get. Because do you know what? Our free marketing review is something that we would have to do for potential clients anyway, right? The accountant's free consultation, they're going to have to do it anyway. The solicitor's free case assessment, right? High perceived value, that's something they would have to do anyway. So we're not asking people to do anything extra. We're just saying, what's the free thing that you do with people at the start of the relationship? And how can you package that so it has high perceived value so that people are going to be willing to stick their contact details in your website?
And see, that's brilliant because, I mean, you're all, like you said, you're already going to be doing it anyway. So you might as well just go ahead and get that done right up front. And this is what I found, too. A lot of people say, oh, you know, this is all great, but I'm just not ready now. Well, that's fine. But, you know, if you do it right the first time and you really offer them a lot of value, they're going to circle back around to you in the end, maybe a year down the road. But chances are they're going to come back.
Yeah, 100%. And most websites are designed to only convert people who are ready to buy right now. So many times we see, particularly with solicitors, the call to action on their website will be start my claim. So that the website is only designed to convert people who are ready to start a claim now. Well, that counts out the 98% of the rest of people who just want to find out even if they have a possible claim. Right? It doesn't mean that they're not going to turn into customers. So it's just, right. It's about having, I mean, some people like to have funnels at different levels. So I was reviewing a solicitor the other day, and their main call to action on their website is to download an ebook. Well, that's okay for people who are just kind of curious. But if you're actually ready to get started now, they've kind of done it the other way, haven't they? If you're ready to get started now, they're just trying to give you this ebook. Well, I don't want the ebook. I just want to talk to someone to see if you guys could help me with my case. So it's important that you have a kind of low barrier to entry conversion goal, which also works for people who are ready to take action now. And like you say, that person might turn into business now, they might turn into business a year later after receiving your emails for a year. That's how you build a solid marketing pipeline. And we've got people on our email list, they've been following me for 5 years, and then all of a sudden they pop up and say, right, I'm ready to go, I know all about you, I'm ready to start with website and SEO, let's go. And you're like, wow, that came from nothing. It feels like an easy sale, but actually it's been like 5 years in the making through just doing the email marketing, but it all came from that free review all those years ago. So it's definitely worth putting some time in the front end to get these leads.
Oh, absolutely. Recently I had a client, I'm building her website now. I spoke with her 2.5, almost 3 years ago, and she finally came back. She said, I'm ready. I'm like, oh, remind me what we talked about, because it was 3 years ago. But she never forgot the conversation we had and the value that, you know, I provided. And when she was finally ready, I was her go-to person, which, you know, that made my heart feel good. It really did. Now, you're talking about email lists, and I'm hearing, reading, you know, I do a lot of studying on all these topics. I have to stay in this industry. I'm seeing what I find a disturbing trend of people saying, you don't really need a mail list. There's all these, you know, cool apps and things that you can just kind of reach out and tap people. Talk about email lists, because I think it's important to maintain those, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Man, if it wasn't, you know, we bit the bullet and got Infusionsoft about, about 4 years ago, and we doubled in the next year. It's just ridiculous. Anyone who says we don't need an email list because we've got Facebook retargeting, right? We're just going to retarget our visitors anyway. They're on Facebook. They don't really care about their emails. People care about their emails. Yes, you want to be on Facebook as well. Yes, you want to be on Google remarketing as well. But you absolutely have to be, you have to have an email list. You have to be emailing people consistently. It's still the best way to get to people. Yes, something else might come along. Yes, someone might replace it. But for the time being, everybody checks their emails. Right, none of your potential clients don't ever check their emails. They check them. You might not be getting through, that's another conversation, but they're checking their emails, so you need to be there.
Exactly. Now, what are some of the things? And, you know, there's newsletters, that's a big thing that comes up all the time. You know, like, well, do I do a template or do I do just text? And I think that kind of depends on what it is that you're trying to do with your customer base, your consumer base, but are there any kind of email tips that you can give to our audience today?
We use email quite a lot, and we also get the question. We get the question from clients a lot, can you design me an email layout? Can you design me an email template? And the answer is no, because something that looks pretty and has loads of images in is just going to end up in your Gmail promotions tab anyway, because it looks like a promotion to Gmail, because it is. If it looks like a text email from someone that you know, right? How many of your, you know, no one's friends send them a big thing with a fancy banner and these sidebars and all of that and a big fat logo at the top, do you? It's just the emails that you read are the text ones. So we always do
plain
text
too.
Only.
Yeah. I thought it was just me because I want to just scan it. You know, I don't know about you, but I read from the middle of the page, which sounds odd, but I focus on the middle of the page, and you know, then my left brain, my right brain is picking up the words on either side of the page. I'm a speed reader. I can't do that if I'm trying to block out images and, you know, flashing sirens and all these other things that are going on in this email. But I didn't realize, and you just gave me another great tip, that, you know, this is why templates wind up in spam. I should have known that, but I didn't know it. So that's a great tip.
It just, you know, think about your Gary Halbert always used to say your audience sorts their mail over a dustbin. It's kind of the same with email, isn't it? When you're looking through email, you're figuring out what stuff you can delete because you've got so many. You're like, can I delete this? And if it looks promotional, you know that you don't have to respond. If it looks like a text thing and it's written with an interesting headline, like, hey, check this out, or just a quick catch up, or, you know, something that actually looks like it's from someone. So I'll write all of Exposure Ninja's emails as if I was talking to one person, right? I don't think of it as a broadcast. I just think of it as one person, right? It's Dan. What am I going to write to Dan? And you get people replying because they don't realize that it's like a templated email. that's the approach that you want, because you know people are going to be reading that. You want it so that they feel bad if they just delete it straight away, because they, you know, they, oh, this is interesting, I have to read this, Tim has written this to me or whatever. So that's what you want. You just don't, you don't want something that immediately looks like junk. It's like sending people a letter through the post and it's got a big like promotion thing over it and it's got a big fat logo on it, and they know it's completely safe, nothing is going to happen if they throw that straight in the bin. You don't want that. You want people to feel like, oh, I better read this. This looks like it might be personal.
You know, I love that, but I'm that way about door hangers. You know, when people come around and they, you know, they printed something at Kinko's or, you know, wherever, and, you know, they're trying to sell their lawn services or, you know, their Chinese food or whatever, and they roll it up and they stick it between my door jamb and my doorknob, I consider that litter. I really do. I'm pretty fussy about that. Don't litter my front porch. And I don't even unroll them. It goes straight in the trash. So it's kind of that mental attitude,
isn't it?
It's like
you're completely blind
to
it, isn't it?
Right, right. Okay,
so
now
we're
talking...
Sorry,
go ahead. No.
I was just going to say we're in like permanent advertising deletion mode, aren't we? We're just trying to save ourselves from the barrages of advertising. So anything that looks like advertising, we're not engaging with. We're just trying to delete it to save ourselves the bandwidth.
Exactly. And, you know, some of it may be good, but we're getting this kind of mental attitude like, oh, man, just stop. Just tell me what I need to know, and then I'll move on to the next thing on my list. So I love the idea of, you know, just text messages. Now, do you tell people, you know, maybe add bullets, add some headlines, or is it just really just a text message? I mean, you know, text written content, not, you know, not a bunch of images and things.
Sometimes do bullets, but rarely. Wouldn't really add a headline, because I wouldn't really add a headline in a personal email. It's just personal email rules apply. So keep it nice and short, keep it concise, use casual language, just make it sound like you've just written to each of those people individually. I think that's that's how we do it personally anyway. I haven't, you know, I tested it in the early days, testing a nice fancy looking thing which took ages, and it just got such poor open rates and low engagement that I thought, oh, do you know what, this other thing's working pretty well. We get so many replies to the emails as well, that there's no reason to kind of deviate from that personal approach. I think
I agree, and I find, you know, just paying attention to what I read. I actually use a junk email for newsletters. I don't want them coming into my personal email box. That's my business box. I don't want them cluttering things up, so I actually use a Yahoo account, and everything goes in there, and a couple times a week I take a stroll through, and I find that I'm reading the ones that are written like you're describing. What I also find, and this is just a personal preference, but I wonder if you have any experience with this, is there are certain keywords or certain, I don't know, languaging that, I mean, if you're using the F word in an email to me, you're gone. I don't care who you are. You know, if you're using the word goddess, ick, just stop. I will delete. I will unsubscribe and delete. You know, I have triggers. but I'm finding that some of these weird little, and I guess they think they're cutesy, I don't want to be talked to like I'm a 3-year-old. I'm an adult. Speak to me like I'm an adult.
Yeah, I'd completely agree. So it has to be professional. It has to be conversational. Obviously, it depends on the personality that you have with the business as well. So most people come to our company, for example, from reading one of my books, and I'm not a professional author, I'm a professional doer. So the books have the odd mistake in, that's totally fine to say at the front, it's full of mistakes. So if you're going to pick me up on grammar, sorry, this is not going to be a happy experience for you. But if you want to rank your website, it's going to be wicked. But then if people come into your business knowing that, then they obviously have one particular expectation. If you go into, we have a company called Innocent in the UK, and they talk in very cutesy language. If you come into their email list, that's exactly what you expect. If it's your bank or your accountant, then you want a very different tone, isn't it? So I think it's about being consistent with the image that you want to portray, and also tuned to the customers that you want. So if I'm selling to Denise, I'm not going to be using the F word. I'm not going to be saying gotta. It's got to be clean. It's got to be professional. So if you're going for business owners, obviously you have to make it professional. If you're going for skaters, then it might be completely different, and actually they probably get a better response using the F word. But so I think it has to be tuned to the audience, really.
I agree. We are out of time. I told you this is the quickest 60 minutes on the internet. I did not get a chance to go through all the different things that I wanted to ask you, and I would love to invite you back again.
Yeah, I'd love to be back.
Oh, thank you. You see what I did there? I did it on the radio, so you can't tell me no. Tricky, huh? So anyway, listen, it has been wonderful chatting with you. I'm so glad that you're my first international visitor. I'm telling you, light bulbs went off twice. So that to me is a very, very successful interview. So Tim, before we go, where can people find you on the web? How can they connect with you?
My name is Tim Cameron Kitchen, or if you want to search for my company, it's Exposure Ninja. And we're on all the usual places that you would expect to find us. And if people want to get a free review of their website and digital marketing, then head over to exposureninja.com. It's totally awesome. It's a 20-minute video delivered to your inbox in a few days, done by a real person, and it will blow your socks off.
I love that. Well, listen, thank you. And as always, our hour together went way too fast. And I thank you for all the wonderful tips and the advice that you've shared with our audience. And today's episode was sponsored by my company, Your Office on the Web. If you're looking for full-on business creation services such as web development, virtual assistants, online business management, social media marketing, and so much more, please visit yourofficeontheweb.com. And be sure to look for this episode in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Tim Cameron Kitchen, and take us along on your success journey. Tim, thank you so much for being with me here today and for sharing your business wisdom, and I wish you much success today and every day.
Thank you, Denise. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Same here.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.